It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, it's Gabe time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's Gabe time.
Game time, we're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Off and rolling Tuesday, September 3rd, 2024. Hope everybody enjoyed their Labor Day weekend and enjoyed week one of college football. But welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. As always, that's Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning 929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
Going pretty well,
good
man.
Good weekend?
Good weekend.
Enjoyed some ball?
Enjoyed some ball.
Yes, sir. Yes. Love to hear it. Now, we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. I'm going to open by giving you the good, bad, and the ugly of Memphis' 40-0 win over North Alabama, but then we'll also get to college football week one as a whole. As far as guests are concerned, bottom half of this hour, Christian Fowler will join Bluff City Media. We have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast. Find it, Apple, Spotify, full length video version on YouTube. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join the show from the Jeff Calkins Show, 9 to 11, right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN. And he's also a columnist at the Daily Memphian. And then 6 o'clock, Harold Grader will join. We didn't have a Monday show, so Harold, of course, joining on a Tuesday. We're bringing back Trip Around the NFL. Second hour.
We're football's back, baby.
5:30.
God, the show's cooking
it
during football season.
How about it? We have Thursday. We're going to have Chiefs versus Ravens. Then we'll get prep for the weekend. We do have the Friday game in Sao Paulo. Eagles versus Packers. We already talked about that.
I got a draft in 3 hours.
Last
draft of the year.
That's a late draft.
Late draft.
I had all my drafts this past week. I wrapped them all up.
I had two last week and then one this week.
All on ESPN?
All on ESPN.
Yeah. Okay. That's my favorite one. I have one on, it's a new, is it Sleepers?
Yeah, I have a Dynasty NBA league in that.
That is a busy interface.
I got Wimby on that.
Can I say this? It is a very,
very
busy app.
Very confusing.
Very busy app. And obviously, it's like a daily fantasy deal, too. And you can bet on it.
Ours is one of those Dynasty leagues, so I during basketball season, it's a big deal.
Yeah, but we'll hop into the Blitz around 6:30. We'll talk about Florida State man, 3-2-1 Noel, and eating dog doo-doo. People are hunting him down like it's their last thing they'll do on this earth. They should, but we'll talk about that. Also, we'll talk about Cheryl Swoops and her hate for Caitlin Clark, but we'll wait till 6:30 to do that. Now, the good and bad and ugly. Memphis wins over North Alabama in their home opener, 40-0. Like, you just look at that score and you're like, okay, that's great. Now let's start with the good. I think we need to start with the shutout that was pitched by the Memphis defense. Now, how much can I really take away from that performance? Not all that much. I want to see them against a offense with a pulse in the FBS. We'll get to see that at home against Troy coming up this Saturday. Get to the stadium, by the way, because that'll be an ESPNU game. And if you're a DirecTV customer, probably not going to be able to see that. We'll talk about it as the show goes along. But I thought the defense played really, really, really well. The player of the game was Chandler Martin, in my opinion. 8 tackles, 6 total solo tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss. Matt Hudson, one of the new additions on that defense, had a pick as the outside linebacker coming over from Harvard. Elijah Herring coming over from Tennessee. He ended up having a sack. I thought they played really well. They had the two interceptions. They had a takeaway from a fumble. And they held North Alabama who ran for, I think, 217 yards in their opening game against Southeast Missouri State. They held them under, I mean, this is like 67 rushing yards. It was something like that. Very well done by this defense and our first look at them. But we also saw last year, early in the season, when they played an FCS opponent, then played Arkansas State, they looked really, really good. So they're going to have to continue to do these things against better competition. The other good thing that we did see was Seth Hennigan, Rock Taylor, Demir Blankensee picking up right where they left off. Seth Hennigan, 22 for 30, 308 yards, 2 TDs, kept the ball out of harm's way. Rock Taylor, 5 catches, 87 yards. Demir Blankensee, 3 catches for 46 yards. He spread the ball around. He hit Kobe Drake, Marcelo Bussey. Brendan Doyle had a long touchdown pass that he caught. Anthony Lanfear, their tight end, I thought he looked like a really good safety blanket. And Tim Cramsey, the OC before the year, said that he feels like he can be that. So that's the other good. Now let's get to the bad and the ugly here. The bad, I have to go with Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium in the sort of situation it's in right now. We know that most of the home side is gone and there's not a lot of seats over there. We get that whole thing. But the big issue came with getting into the stadium, Connor. Getting into the stadium was a problem. I mean, I walked up with about 30 minutes before the kick, and I got in, and the Tigers had already run out. I had about 3 minutes before the kick. It took about 25, 27 minutes to get through the line right there at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. And part of me, like, it was just this big mass of people. It's like you need a line leader. You need someone to show you in the direction and keep this thing a little bit more single file. Now, I will say Ed Scott, the new athletics director at the University of Memphis, did sort of apologize for that. And he said they're going to find different ways to get people in the stadium and make it a more uniform situation for everybody. He said, "We appreciate your patience as we strive to create a safe and enjoyable experience at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. As a department, we are committed to finding solutions to improve the fan experience, including the ticket scanning and security process prior to each game. Go Tigers, go." That was not great. That was not great. Now, we knew we were going to have some issues because there's limited entrances to go in with all of the construction, but that was very, very rough. If you were one of the 25 to 26,000 fans on hand, you had trouble getting into the stadium. That can't happen. That can't happen.
Outside of that, how was the crowd?
The crowd was solid. The crowd was solid. I mean, it was what you would expect for a North Alabama game with half a stadium.
25,000, pretty good.
It's fine. It's not fine bad for an opening game. And I don't think there was any big issues once you got into the stadium. I will also say lines very long at all the concessions. Lines long at the toilets. Like, it's just, that's what it's going to be for the next couple of years while they're doing all this construction. But hopefully, behind the scenes, they can find better ways to get people in and out of that stadium a little more on time. You don't want to sit out there and think you have time, you know, with 30 minutes before kickoff and miss the opening kickoff. That's not, no fan wants that. No fan wants that. So that's the bad. Now, the ugly, Connor, I have to eat a little crow on this because I thought it would be a whole lot better. I just truly, truly did. The run game was very bad. Not good at all. Now, if you want to take the positive spin on the thing and you want to, you know, make excuses for what it looked like, Tigers ran 26 times for 64 yards, 2.5 yards per carry. If you want to make an excuse, you could say, well, you know, generally, they didn't want to show much. They're playing an FCS opponent. A lot of coaches hide what they want to do in the regular season because they don't want to give people film on what they want to accomplish. But a lot of inside zones, a lot of inside handoffs out of the shotgun, and they couldn't really get anything going. They had 3 touchdowns running, but that doesn't tell the whole story. Their open field running, they didn't create any explosives. Their longest run of the day was Mario Anderson Jr., 17 yards. I do think he's got a little juice about him. He does not go down easily. He sort of does some jump cuts in the backfield, you know, tries to find a lane, then gets downhill. Maybe takes a little bit too much time to develop. But at the same time, it's just got to be better than that. And with that, Sutton Smith goes down in game one. We're awaiting MRI results for him, and he's the do-it-all back. He was the guy you expected to be very good this year. He was waiting for his turn, and it seemed like he finally got his turn, and then he gets taken off in the first quarter after 3 carries for 7 yards. We're going to await those MRI results, but Brian Silverfield said, doesn't look good right now for Sutton Smith. Now, they've been talking about a potential red shirt to bring him back for another year. We'll see how it all plays out. But the run game was not good, and you lose one of your lead backs. That is ugly. That's something that they're going to have to improve upon going into the rest of the regular season, where you're going to have a lot more hard matchups than North Alabama. That was very frustrating to watch for the most part as people got into Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, watched it on ESPN+.
Yeah, because it just felt like if you could have had a little bit more in the running game, you should have won more than 40-0. I know 40-0 is a very substantial win, but it did just, if there was one ugly thing, it was definitely the run game. I do have some hope in that they weren't just trying to show a lot, because Mario Anderson only got 10 carries, and, you know, he had 46 yards, so he was more successful with the ball in his hands than the other running backs were, and he just didn't have a ton of opportunity. But I will say that 17-yard carry does a lot. It's doing a lot in the yards.
it's doing a lot of carrying for his entire game.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Now, if you look at what North Alabama did in week one, they lost 37-15 to Southeast Missouri State. They were on the road for the FCS kickoff, and Southeast Missouri State had a way better day than Memphis did running the ball. They had 45 carries for 176 yards. That's good for 3.9 yards per carry. Memphis only could muster 2.5 yards per carry. So if you compare yourself and your running game to what SEMO was able to do,
not good.
Not good. Not good. And you're going to be coming up on a Florida State game, which we'll talk about here in a second. That's pretty ugly as well. You're coming up on a Florida State game where it looks like they're gettable in the trenches. Georgia Tech exposed them. Boston College definitely exposed them last night, 28-13 win. And they ended on a 6-minute and 4-second drive where they just went and kneed the ball out at the very end. They look like you can expose them up front, but this O-line, this running back room didn't show the ability to expose North Alabama. So Your hunch about potentially exposing that Florida State defensive line and that defensive front, their front seven, I wouldn't feel that great about it right this second. Now, that's another ugly thing we have to talk about. Florida State's now 0-2, 0-2 in the ACC before we even get to week two. That's nuts. Absolutely nuts. But they lost to Boston College 28-13. Already mentioned it. And going into this year, you thought week three was going to be a massive opportunity for the Tigers, right? Like just this huge opportunity against a potential top 10, top 15 preseason AP poll team, a team that has a lot of talent on that side of the ball. You thought it was a game that was going to be a free shot, for lack of a better term. You thought that you'd be able to go in there, play a potentially close game, maybe win the game, and you'd get a lot of credit for that. Connor, it does not look that way anymore. This game is not a free shot. I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt when they were over in Ireland against Georgia Tech game one of the year. They were a little uncomfortable. But after watching them against Boston College, I truly believe this. That's a below-average college football team. And what the committee will not do for you is give you props for losing close or beating even a below-average college football team. That's not how it's going to work. This is going to be, as we get into week three, and I'll get this, Florida State has 2 weeks of preparation, and their back is even more up against the wall than it was going into last night. That's a game you almost have to win now. That's a game that you should win based on what Florida State has done through 2 weeks.
It has been one of the worst-case scenarios for Memphis, because you felt like, okay, they've dropped the first game, but at least Boston College, they'll get back into it, and it'll be set up to where you could still get a bump from this game. But now it feels like there's an expectation that you should either win the game, or if you lose, it's just disappointing.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest turnaround of events. It's just
it's
worst-case scenario.
It's the worst-case scenario, and it's just something I would have never even come close to predicting heading into the season.
But you kind of did.
I thought that this team was overranked.
You definitely kind of predicted.
I didn't think they'd lose to Georgia Tech and Boston College game one and two.
You thought they'd lose to Georgia Tech.
Sure.
You did not see Boston College.
Boston College, year one with Bill O'Brien? Come on, man. I never saw that coming. I never saw that coming. But if you watched sort of the game last night, you saw, yeah, DJU's really bad, and they probably need to make a quarterback switch. Here's the other part of it.
That missed throw in the corner of the end zone.
Terrible.
Holy
terrible.
Crap.
I would have sent him to the locker room after that. You're not ready to play. You're uncomfortable. This isn't going to work out for us. And honestly, Brock Glenn, Lausanne alum, probably should have been put in at some point. But it doesn't stop there with DJ Uiagalelei, right? Like, that team, They aren't tough. They allowed 263 rushing yards. They only ran for 21 yards. They generally can't really stick in the secondary. They don't have any playmakers on the outside. They don't have anything that resembles the team that they were a year ago. Now, I know that they did all this in the transfer portal. They went and got a bunch of Alabama guys, but none of those guys are paying off right now. And Mike Norvell, I'm just kind of amazed because every quarterback he's had, he's made something out of, like at least something. Jordan Travis, before he got there, we thought this guy, I don't think he'll ever be a very good college football quarterback. Obviously, he turned him into something. Brady White was a guy who didn't have a whole lot of talent. But he had talent around him. He made him into one of the leading passers in Memphis football history. We know what he did with Riley Ferguson. I thought this DJU experience with the just natural sort of physical ability that DJU had, I thought he'd be able to adjust and figure it out with him. I think he right now is sort of caught with his pants down, realizing I can't make anything out of this guy. And it shouldn't be that surprising in the end of the day. DJU was a five-star recruit going to Clemson. He had that one good game against Notre Dame where he broke passing records and yardage records. And then from then on, he's been a just truly average quarterback. And last year at Oregon State, I think what was nice for him is he was hidden. He didn't have to really pace that offense. They had a Joe Moore Award finalist offensive line. They had Damian Martinez in the backfield. They had a really good defense. All he had to do was turn around, hand the ball to Damian Martinez, get to a couple play action concepts, stare down one receiver, and let his defense do the rest of the work. Now that he is asked to do more, he can't do it. Last night, I know you saw it, that 4th-and-5 pick.
Good God.
I could not believe he made that mistake in year 5 of college football. You're 6'6", 250 pounds, and you got spooked by a rush and just threw it out into the flat and just an easy lob interception for Boston College to take the other way and completely take you out of the game.
He looked like a freshman quarterback.
And here's what's funny about him. He's bad on script. Like, he's not a good quarterback on script. He's even worse off script, though. He cannot make a play when everything breaks down. And I think a lot of the quarterbacks that Norvell has had in the past can make some things happen. They keep their head about them when things break down. Brady White was good at it. Riley Ferguson was pretty decent at it after a year. Jordan Travis was great at it. If something went wrong with a play, he could roll out, get into scramble drill, go make something happen downfield, maybe make something happen with his legs. DJU has no ability to do that. If you look at the ESPN College Football playoff predictor, too, by the way, before the Georgia Tech game, Florida State had a 36% chance to get into the college football playoff, according to the ESPN College Football Playoff Predictor. That went down to, before the BC game, 10%. After the BC game, last night, where they lost 28-13, 1%, and it is lowering by the second.
I was surprised it was even one.
This game that the Tigers are going to play in a couple of weeks against this Florida State team is going to be massive, but massive for different reasons. You have to, in my opinion, go win that game if you want to be taken seriously as a potential college football playoff Group of Five representative. Now, I will say this. The rest of the Group of Five did not fare all that well this week. I think there was sort of this three-horse race we were talking about, right? Like, we were talking about Liberty, and we were talking about Boise State, and that was sort of it. If you watch Liberty, I know they have an easy schedule, but Liberty did not look all that convincing in game one against Campbell. 41-24, allowed 24 points against that Campbell team. Now, their offense is great. I really like Caden Salter. They have a good running back, but their defense is not good enough.
Come on, App State.
Their defense is not good enough.
Come on.
I think App State, based on that first game, will certainly have a chance. Jacksonville State, though, did not look very good in week one. Shout out Kyron Samuels, or lack of shout out.
That was
Kyron
tough.
Samuels. 55-27 against Coastal Carolina.
Seeing his pregame tweet and him all fired up, and then like very quickly you saw the score and you're like, oh no,
gosh,
Kyron.
Yes.
No.
And then Boise State. I will give a shout out to Ashton Jeanty. Ashton Jeanty was ridiculous.
That was nuts.
He's the best running back in college football. 20 carries, 267 yards, 6 touchdowns. 6 freaking touchdowns. Who does that? I mean, I know we're talking about like Heisman leaders coming out of week one. I don't think a running back from Boise State will win it ultimately. But I would put him sort of up there toward the top of the list.
I can't even do that on College Football 25.
Right. That's nuts.
That's nuts.
It's crazy.
Six
touchdowns and 20 carries. A third of your carries.
That's insane. I didn't know it was only 20.
But I sort of figured this may be the case. But Boise State went to Georgia Southern in sort of that heat and, you know, dealing with the Southern heat that we always deal with here in Memphis. Gave up 45 points to Georgia Southern. You look around the country at some of these group of five teams that you thought were going to be very dominant. I don't think Memphis, Liberty, or Boise State looked overly dominant week one. I think the most dominant team that you looked at in week one was the team that went on the road out of the Mountain West to a Big 12 opponent in Houston and handled business. Shout out to Barry Odom. 27-7 UNLV after losing their all-conference great quarterback to USC, Jaden Maiava. He brings in a guy named Matthew Sluka from Holy Cross, and they win 27-7 on the road against Houston to start the year. And I thought Houston would be able to handle that game. But UNLV's defense stood up. They were very, very good. That's a team that now, after week one, you have to start talking about in this group of five conversation. They were great a year ago, 9-10 wins. This year, you open a season like that, can't ignore them. Can't ignore them. And you can't ignore Barry Odom for the rest of the year. What he has done to turn around that program, UNLV has always been where coaches go to die, right? Like, there's no other way to put it. You get coaches over there that have had, you know, good stints as head coaches in the past, or they've been really good offensive coordinators, and they inevitably go 3-9 or 4-8 for a couple of years, and then they get kicked out and they get fired and they have to go find another OC, DC position, whatever their position was previously. Barry Odom has turned that program around like I've never seen. And UNLV, if they know what's good for them, probably back up the Brinks truck as much as you can. I know you probably don't have a whole lot of money going through the football program right now, but it's probably growing with the success he's had. You got to try to find a way to keep that guy there. Because I would imagine as the season goes along and you start seeing guys get fired, and I'll mention one guy in a second over at Florida. As you start seeing guys get fired, his name's going to come up. And to see UNLV as the coach rehab for Barry Odom, that's not how that usually goes. I was very impressed with what they did week one. And I think I have to put them on that short list of, hey, group of five representing the college football playoff, come on down.
Do you think Memphis is still in the lead for that, though, after week one?
Yeah, sure. But,
or is it kind of like tied for first because everybody technically won?
You don't slip up against Troy. Let's see what they do against Florida State, and we'll move from there. But I guess of the top three, they were the most dominant in their particular performance, but it would just happen to be against North Alabama, and I'm not gonna overreact to that. Now, week one was defined by a couple of things. The two big conferences fared a lot different. Big Ten, who makes a lot of money, 17-1. In week one with their 18 members. The SEC, though, 1-3 in their ranked matchups. Florida goes down, Clemson goes down, A&M goes down. And let's start with the one win that the SEC had in a ranked matchup. Georgia, 34-3 over Clemson.
Beat, dog walked them.
He just killed
dog
them. And Clemson was not very disciplined.
No.
They didn't have the talent to compete against Georgia. They hung in there for the first half. Like
first quarter.
About 6 points.
Yeah.
Defensively, they looked okay, but then it just spiraled out of control because they couldn't get anything going offensively. I think there was a lot of sharps and betters that were on Clemson at like 13.5 or 14.5. They got proved completely wrong. But I think what we need to really discuss here, not just like Carson Beck as the number one draft pick in the 2025 NFL draft, not the talent they possess at the wide receiver position or defensive line or defensive backfield, because they're very talented across the board. But I think we really need to discuss the level that Georgia is at right now. This is Alabama Nick Saban level. That's what it is. That was their 40th straight win in a regular season game. They now are 17-2 since 2020 against ranked opponents. They now have consistently beat Clemson the last nine times. 8 out of the last 9 times they have beaten that Clemson program. And if you know anything about Clemson in the last 9 or so of matchups that Georgia has seen them, Clemson has been at the top. That's been Dabo Sweeney. That has been, you know, a very good program. And Georgia just dismantles them. The level with which Kirby Smart, even with the distractions they've had, the level that he has at getting these guys ready and never being unprepared is something that we don't see constantly. It's something that I think, you know, consistently we only saw from Nick Saban in Alabama. There's never an issue. It doesn't mean that they can't lose. They've lost to Alabama twice. That's their two ranked losses in the since 2020. I get that. But when we just look at their body of work and their resume since Kirby Smart has gotten there, they just don't give you anything. If you're going to beat them, you have to beat them straight up. They don't turn the ball over. They don't miss assignments. They are somehow disciplined off on the field when they're not so disciplined off the field. Kirby is unbelievable in that program. I truly believe they can step into this spot. Like Kirby has the chance to create the type of resume that Nick Saban had over the years, a guy he worked under.
And it was with missing their star running back.
Yeah, no Trevor Etienne. Wasn't there.
Because Nate Frazier could run, though. That dude was fast.
but out because of the DUI.
Right.
Trevor Etienne, their lead running back. They're dominant as hell. Miami at Florida. We had Miami win 41-17. And our guy Cam Ward, buddy, showed the hell up, didn't he?
Smooth.
I love Smooth. The guy. I've always loved the guy. And I think this was truly, and I know he went from, and I've liked him since he was at freaking Incarnate Word at the FCS level. He was unbelievable there. But this is his first real coming out party. I know he was at Washington State for a couple of years, and he was really playing well there for the most part. But this is the first time I think all of college football got to huddle around and see him and what he can be. The throw he made, rolling out to his left across his body to the back of the end zone for a touchdown, was the best throw of the week. I don't have any other way of putting it. But he can make plays off schedule. He can do it from the pocket. He is the quarterback that Miami has been looking for. They thought it was Tyler Van Dyke for a minute. They get to the portal this offseason. They see Cam Ward. They get him using some money, some NIL funds. And I think that's the best decision they've made really since 2003, since they were on top of the college football world.
They have a three-headed little monster there on offense because Cam Ward looked really smooth. He made that one mistake with that rollout. He tried to throw it across his body.
He threw it a little high, but you know what's funny? It was right there where, like, his receiver tipped off his hands.
The guy,
it was a bad throw,
I don't think the guy that tipped it, though, was who he was actually throwing it to.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But either way, Restrepo, dude, that guy was all over the field. And then Damian Martinez.
Yep.
Very good running back.
But
very
Cam Ward finished that game 26 for 35, 385 yards, 3 TDs. And now the question turns directly to Florida, who lost Graham Mertz late in that game. Now you have DJ Lagway, their five-star, who they wanted to sit on for a year. And they thought that, okay, maybe this can save Billy Napier's job. You look at this Florida team, and I know Scott Strickland, their AD, was on Feinbaum last week saying, I expect Billy Napier to be the coach of Florida for a long, long time. Yeah, buddy, you're going to have to rethink that. I am fully on board, and this is the easiest projection or prediction I can make about this Florida job. Billy Napier is going to be fired in the middle of the season this year.
Which game? Is it UCF or Tennessee?
Let's see.
It feels like it's going to be around there.
Let's see. What can he do against A&M if he gets blown out by A&M after the showing they put against Notre Dame? I don't think he'll last much longer than that. But as you get to the back half of the season, once you get to that Georgia game, I think you'll start to see the sort of rumors and everything getting really loud.
You think he makes it to November?
I think it's possible. I think it's possible because it's – I'll say this as a guy who has friends that had to deal with coaching switches in the middle of the year. It's never a good thing. It's not a good thing.
If you're going to be bad, you might as well keep them.
Yeah. Like, if you're going to be bad, just wait till the end of the year and get rid of them. Get your coach pool ready. They'll have time behind the scenes to decide who they're going to hire after him. I don't think I just think generally as a rule, firing somebody in the middle of the season is not the best thing in the world. But I think their hands are going to be tied because I think this team is going to be 3-9, maybe 4-8. It's not good enough at Florida. Not good enough at Florida at all. Now, speaking of another team that it's not good enough with, A&M, Notre Dame. Notre Dame got over top 23-13. Ben Morrison from Notre Dame, their corner, unbelievable. Notre Dame's defense was very, very fast, very athletic. I'm sort of wondering, what team around the country has the ability to really score a bunch of boatloads of points on them. But we've been waiting for the Connor Wigman experience. That was not great, though, right? Two interceptions, threw for under 200 yards, was not very efficient at all. We've been waiting for that for a while. Did not look good. We had the USC versus LSU game.
Game was awesome.
It was great. Great game. USC wins 27-20. Nussmeier and Moss delivered.
What a quarterback battle. Probably the best of the weekend.
Well, and no, it's...
Both of them just locked in, dude.
And here's where I want to go with this. There's a lesson to be taken from this. A little bit of a lesson from a coaching staff perspective and from a quarterback perspective.
A transfer portal perspective?
Don't necessarily look for the easy way out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look for it. Both of these guys sat behind Heisman Trophy winners, got to learn, and look at how much better they are on the back end because of it. Miller Moss was phenomenal in that fourth quarter. He went 11 for 14 for 146 yards, 10-plus yard throws. He was 10 for 11 for 240 yards. Facing a blitz, 8 for 14, 114 yards. He was unflappable. He finished the game 27 for 36, 378, and a touchdown. He was the Big Ten player of the week. Garrett Nussmeier, I thought, looked phenomenal besides the one pick, 29 for 38, 340 yards, two TDs. Those guys sat behind Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks, waited their turn, got to about their junior or senior year, finally got their opportunity, and look how much better on the back end they are because of it. I'm not saying you can't transfer out because you should sit behind and learn from somebody. Sometimes there's a lot of situations, quite frankly, where you get out and you find greener pastures. Look at Bo Nix, look at Kyler Murray, look at Baker. Maybe I don't have to keep doing it. Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams. There's a lot of examples of guys getting out of their original situation and going and finding a better situation. But sometimes, if you believe in yourself, you believe in the program you're a part of, you're going to come out better on the other side. And I thought that was a great example of the other side of the transfer portal conversation when it comes to quarterbacks. Those two guys waited their turn. They're way better because of it.
What did you make of USC and LSU after the game? Like, did you think it was a – did LSU lose the game or did USC win the game?
I thought LSU just sort of let it spiral out of control on them.
They were so undisciplined in the second half. Many penalties.
They were. I also thought that they didn't stop the run near well enough against USC, which was kind of an upset.
They couldn't get off the field. Every time they needed like a big third down stop, it felt like Miller Moss was able to find somebody.
There
was a penalty.
Final thing that's probably the biggest story of this game outside of the quarterbacks, USC's defense. Alex Grinch no longer there. De'Anton Lynn comes in. He was a little more blitz-heavy, found some ways to get after the quarterback a little bit. But that team did not allow LSU to run the ball with any level of consistency, put it all on Garrett Nussmeier's shoulders. And by the fourth quarter, by the second half, he was starting to make a little bit more mistakes with the ball, and he had to force some things into harm's way. And that's why USC ended up winning the game. What did you think of the Brian Kelly after the game?
Performative.
Again, and he's performative. It's performative, just like the execution quote that he made a couple of years ago.
I didn't mind it because I don't disagree with what he said. It is his job to have his team more focused. I get that part. Like, yes, that is correct, but how many opening games are you going to lose, dude?
LSU's lost their last five.
Like every year we're doing the same thing with Brian Kelly.
LSU has lost their last five as in their opener, and he has lost every single opener since he's been at LSU.
That's crazy.
And I am going to pose the question a little bit later because I want to save this for Harold Grader because I think it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting conversation because I think Brian Kelly's a good enough coach, kind of a weird guy that's beyond the point. We've seen some bad guys and not so good pasts. We've seen guys be very good football coaches even despite that. He wins 9 or 10 games a year, sort of what he does, did it at Notre Dame. But the last two coaches that were at LSU won natties, Ed O and Les Miles. And then Nick Saban won one as well. Sorry, so the last three coaches, I guess. But when you look at Brian Kelly, you have to start questioning this. Is it ever going to be good enough to go win a national championship? Are they ever under Brian Kelly at LSU going to be able to get over top of the Alabamas, the Georgias, even the Ole Misses of the world at this particular moment? That's a question that we need to start asking ourselves because he's never won an opening game. He tends to struggle in these moments. And that was another example of a team that just wasn't fully bought in, rested when they got up in that game. And that's been a consistent issue with him since he's gotten to LSU. So that's a question we need to ask ourselves as this season goes along. Now let's go ahead and grab our first break of the day. When we come back, we'll talk some Memphis football win over North Alabama, 40-0. We'll talk about week one of college football, but it's all going to be with my guy Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media. He's next. Content creator of Bluff City Media. We have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast. Releases every single Tuesday at noon. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. Christian, how's it going, brother?
Everything's wonderful, Gabe. How you doing?
I am doing well. I mean, I had a weekend full of college football greatness. Some not so greatness. I mean, there were some bad performances out there. But I want to open on Memphis versus North Alabama. They win 40-0. They ended up covering. Defense looked okay, although you can't take that much from it. Seth Hennigan and his main receivers, Rock Taylor, Demir Blankensy, looked good. I have to ask you though about the bad. The bad was, or I guess the ugly was, the running game. That was brutal, man. That was brutal to watch. And I don't know if they're hiding what they want to do with their run game and just sort of doing some inside zones out of the gun just to see, you know, if North Alabama was good enough or not. But Southeast Missouri State, who beat that team 37-15, ran the ball a hell of a lot better. Run game did not look good week one.
No, not at all. And even if it was staying vanilla and doing only inside zones, which is what we saw for the majority, if not all, of this game, it should still be better than it was. 26 carries for 59 yards at 2.3 yards per carry. It's not good. There's no way to sugarcoat that is at least a little bit concerning moving forward. Now, could that be the outlier and Memphis is a great running team moving forward? Sure, absolutely, but it doesn't feel like it, right? You play a much inferior team in North Alabama. Just like you mentioned last week, they played SEMO. I think they averaged 6.2 yards per carry and ran for well over 200 yards. Another much inferior opponent to Memphis. And could it be a one-off? Could it be a week one thing? Could it be, you know, this line just needs more time to gel with each other and they need more chemistry? Yes, that could be the case. But at least from week one, the first game, that is a major concern going forward, because we've seen this with Memphis before. We've seen them not able to consistently establish a ground game really every year other than Ryan Silverfield's tenure outside of last year. And it held this offense back because I think it put too much pressure on Seth. I think it made Memphis's offense too one-dimensional, which made defending them much easier. And if this is going to be the special season that a lot of people believe that it's going to be, Memphis is going to have to be able to run the ball successfully. And I think we have to be at least a little bit concerned after week one.
Yeah, and then also to add insult to injury with a run game, Sutton Smith potentially gone for the year. We're waiting on MRI results, but Ryan Silverfield said after the game it doesn't look good, and that was a guy you thought was going to be a massive playmaker for this team, not just in the run game, but in the pass game. It's going to be an uphill battle to find guys to be able to replace him. I thought Greg DeRosier, Jr., he looks solid. He's the transfer from UMass. But it's going to be all hands on deck with Sutton Smith out. They're talking about potential redshirt, maybe him coming back for another year. But you're going to have to find somebody to replace that type of production. I don't know if you're going to lean on Mario Anderson 30 times a game the way that South Carolina did. So they're going to have to find somebody to replace what they thought Sutton Smith could give them.
Yeah, and honestly, that might be the answer, leaning even more heavily on Mario Anderson. Even though he may not be the breakaway, big play type of back, he was by far the most consistent in this game. He averaged 4.6 yards per carry, and you look down the rest of the roster, Greg DeRosier, 4 carries for 6 yards. Sutton Smith, in a little bit of time that he did play before getting injured, 3 carries for 7 yards. Makari Bodyford got a few carries for 0 yards. So the only effectiveness they had at all running the ball came from Mario Anderson. And I know they don't want to drive him into the dirt, but this staff showed last year that they're not scared to lean heavily on one running back, which they did with Blake Watson last year. We didn't see a ton of Sutton Smith last year. We didn't see much of any running back that wasn't named Blake Watson last year. I know we saw Brandon Thomas around the goal line and then short yardage sometime. But I think that's got to be the answer now. You just have too much unproven. There's too much riding on this season, and if you need consistent production out of the backfield, Mario Anderson seems to be by far and away the best option. So even if it's got to be him for, you know, 20 to 25 carries a game and then spread out the rest of them between a couple of these other guys, I think that may be the best option moving forward.
Yeah, and I look at the game they're going to play in 2 weeks. Obviously, they have to handle this Troy game before we actually get there, but Florida State has been very easily run on. We saw it last night against Boston College. We saw it in game one against Georgia Tech. If they're not able to run the ball successfully against Florida State, it's going to be an uphill battle to go win that game, even though I believe at this point, especially after watching last night, that is a below-average college football team, certainly a below-average ACC team.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and it's not. It wouldn't be an upset anymore at this point after losing to Georgia Tech and Boston College. Memphis going to Tallahassee and beating Florida State is not going to be the game that we thought it was going to be, or the challenge that we thought it was going to be. Do I still think it'll be highly competitive? More than likely. I mean, you've got two coaches that coach on the same staff together, and Mike Norvell and Ryan Silverfield. So there's going to be that motivation. And then there's also the fact that Florida State's coming off a bye week. Florida State is 0-2 and is dug themselves into an extremely deep hole. And this is, you know, the rest of the games for this season are this season for them. So Florida State has to give every game from here on out everything they've got. They are in a deep hole. They're coming off a bye week. But we shall see. We'll see how it plays out. But like you're saying, they have to be able to run the ball successfully. If they're going to keep that defense off balance, if they're going to be able to control the game, if this was a typical year, I'd probably say try to keep Florida State's offense off the field. But they're not scary at this point. So it's not even really for that. It's just to control the game and kind of push it the way that you want to. And they really need to show major strides this upcoming week against Troy in the running game for me to feel like they can continue to do it throughout the season. If we see another, you know, 3 yard per carry game and Memphis struggles to get push up front, then I think the concern level is going to be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse wrap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Extremely high going into the Florida State game, at least as far as the running game goes.
It really is wild how quickly that sort of matchup took a turn for the worst. Before the season, ACC preseason poll had Florida State at the top. AAC preseason poll had Memphis at the top. You think this is going to be a premier matchup. And you thought for Memphis, you know, if Florida State stayed somewhere between the top 10, top 20 in the country, it would be a free shot. But it's not that at all. I feel like Memphis, you know, when you look at the committee at the end of the year, when it comes to the college football playoff, they're not going to get any points for playing close with that Florida State team. Or I don't even think they'll get that many, points or, benefit of the doubt for beating that team. It doesn't seem to help you really at this point.
No, it has turned from, like you said, kind of that free game of like, go out there. If you lose, it's probably not going to be major against you. Because that team was expected to be so good, and if you win it, it's massive. But now, I don't want to say it's like a must-win game, but it plays very negatively against you if you're the first team to lose to Florida State with how bad they've played. Now, who knows what happened throughout the rest of the season? That, you know, loss could look better, it could look worse. who knows if they do end up losing that game. But it's one that Memphis really needs to win now. They don't have that freedom of this is going to be a potential college football playoff team, a potential ACC championship contender or winner. So it has changed a lot. I think it's become much more of a must-win game than it was at the beginning of the season, without a doubt.
And how wild is it? Because we've been around Mike Norvell. I got coached by the guy. Like I know he has 2 weeks to prepare for this game, and maybe some things will change in that two-week period, but it's still hard. I don't know if they have the horses to really compete at the highest of levels this season. It's wild to me to see he doesn't really seem to have an answer, you know, for DJU's lack of performance, his lack of production. And he's always had an answer for every quarterback he's had. And he's had a lot of different, you know, styles of quarterback, whether it was Jordan Travis who could use his legs, Riley Ferguson throwing from the pocket, Brady White who didn't have, like, crazy arm talent, couldn't use his legs all that much, but he always schemed guys open for him. He doesn't have an answer for DJU right now.
It is extremely shocking to see a Mike Norvell offense that is not good at all, that can't move the ball. They couldn't do anything against Boston College last night. I mean, it was rough. They couldn't run the ball. DJU looked absolutely horrible. He looked even worse than he did in the Georgia Tech game. And the little bit of semblance of run game they showed in the Georgia Tech game was not there against Boston College at all. I can't remember exactly what they finished with.
21 yards rushing.
21 yards. So it is. It's very strange. It's very shocking to see what a lot of people consider one of the better offensive minds in all of college football have an offense that really can't even score points and can't even contend against lesser, you know, on paper at least, lesser teams and teams that weren't thought highly of going into the season. Especially Boston College under Bill O'Brien, they did not have high expectations this year at all. I think even after the Georgia Tech loss, I think Florida State was maybe 16.5-point favorites in that game, if I'm not mistaken. So it's very strange. It is very strange to watch them and just see how inept they are offensively. The offensive line looks out of sync, not getting any push. Players aren't really getting open. DJU has been extremely inaccurate, especially in the Boston College game. Just something we've never really seen from a Mike Norvell coached team at all.
Yeah, and they might be cursed now from 3-2-1 Noel, who said, if Florida State loses to BC this weekend, I'll eat dog ass out of a red Solo cup with a spoon and post a video of me doing it. He said, book it. Obviously, they lost, and he deleted all of his social accounts. He's going to have to break the curse by eating this dog poop, right?
I think I would chalk it up. I don't think I'd be doing that.
Well, he shouldn't have said it then. You know what I mean?
Like,
Don't promise the people on X that you're going to do it and then back out at the last second when everything goes
back
bad.
Out.
I think he deleted all of his stuff like midway through the second quarter because he saw it was going in the wrong direction and that Florida State was going to get exposed.
I can't even blame him. If I do the same thing, I'd get the heck out of Dodge.
Well, here's the other thing. You wouldn't have done the same thing because you wouldn't have promised that on the front end. I think that's probably the biggest thing you should take away from that. You're not dumb enough to put that type of proclamation on your ex account.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to be eating any feces regardless of which team wins or loses. That will not be happening for me.
All right. Now, before I let you roll, this is Christian Fowler again on X at C Fowler, BCM senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Give me one team you were most impressed by this week for week one, one team you were least impressed by in week one, and we'll leave Florida State out of the least impressive because that's old news based on us talking about it already.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many good options for impressive teams, and I know there's probably more obvious ones than I'm going to go. And Georgia obviously sticks out. What they did to Clemson earns them a lot of that. But for me, it was Alabama. And I know they played Western Kentucky. I know Western Kentucky is not a great program by any means, but they're typically pretty solid. I think in this game, Alabama scored, it was either 42 or 49 points in the first half, is the most points Western Kentucky had allowed since coming into the FBS in 2007 in the first half. And I think the reason that it's so impressive is people see that Jalen Milroe is still there, and they just assume that Kalen DeBoer was able to really keep this roster intact. And I want to say they had 26 transfers or something like that.
Right.
And a lot of those were guys that played meaningful snaps last year. And he's had to deal with, you know, the conversation all offseason. Alabama's going to fall off. No Nick Saban. it's not going to be the same Alabama. Alabama's not the boogeyman anymore. We don't have to worry about this team, even if they have Jalen Milroe. It's over. And at least for 1 week, they looked completely dominant on both sides of the ball. The defense looked incredible. They pitched a shutout against Western Kentucky. They just played with that tenacity, that speed that we're used to seeing from Alabama defenses. And then offensively, Jalen Milroe has been up and down. We know he got benched last year against South Florida and eventually came back and was a dark horse for a Heisman Trophy contender at the end of the year. But he looked impeccable. He only threw 9 passes but completed 7 of them for 200 yards, 3 touchdowns, had 10 carries for 80 yards and 2 more touchdowns. 5-star true freshman Ryan Williams had 2 catches for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns. It was just everywhere. They looked great everywhere. And we know if you pay attention, this offensive line that they have built is still really, really good. Tyler Booker, Caden Proctor, they are massive up front. And I know a lot of people talked about it last year with the size that they had. But I think they have the potential at least to be even better on the offensive line this year. And they just look like one of, if not the most complete team in college football. Granted, small sample size, not a big school, but there's just something different. You can see it. A lot of people talked about it with Tennessee this past weekend. A lot of people talked about it with Ole Miss this past weekend, even though they played really bad teams. There's just a different look when a team is special and is really good. And to me, that's what Alabama looked like this weekend. Like I said, there are a lot of other impressive teams, but I just feel like with everything they've underwent this offseason, with losing arguably the greatest coach in college football history and having to find a lot of new guys to fill holes, whether it was starting spots or depth, losing players like Caleb Downs, it's hard to fill that. And I think they did a wonderful job of it. Everybody has been talking about Ohio State this year going into this offseason, that they've built one of the best college football rosters of all time, and how, if it's going to be a team that's not Georgia, it's going to be Ohio State. But I truly think Alabama's still going to have something to say about it because they look great. And if Jalen Milroe has improved, which it looked like he has, they should be a scary team all year.
Yeah, and now who laid an egg that you can't ignore?
Oh, there were a lot of eggs laid. There were a lot of eggs laid. Does it have to be a top 25?
No, just go for it. It doesn't matter.
The University of Florida looked horrible this weekend. They were 2.5-point underdogs against Miami. They were at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. They were one that I saw a lot of people being like a trendy upset pick, with Miami being number 19 in the country, it being the in-state rivalry game. A lot of people felt like Florida had been slept on throughout the offseason and that people were underrating them and thinking that they weren't going to be successful this year. I heard a lot of good things, people saying Graham Mertz isn't as bad as people think he is. He should have a really good year this year.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.